government wants to close them down, but we want them to stay. They're playing sounds that we all like, so don't take them away.
When you're walking down the street with your transistor radio, everybody has a good time. You can dance to the beat of your transistor radio, even when the sun don't shine. You can hear your favorite rock and roll, rhythm and blues with a lot of soul. Yeah, oh, we love the pirate stations. We love the pirate stations. We love the pirate stations. Don't let them take them away. Don't let them take them away. Some swinging DJs playing top 40 records, they can really turn you on. Now the government's trying to close down the stations. What'll happen when they're gone? You won't hear the music that you like any old time of day.
Yes, you're listening to the Radio Thrift Shop, where you'll find seldom seen and seldom heard recordings from the past century plus of recorded sound. Digging 78s, cassettes, 45s, 33s, reel-to-reels, homemade CDs, and unexplored musical treasures. This is DJ Frederick, and you're listening to broadcast 139 of the Radio Thrift Shop. Yeah, that's something to celebrate. All right, going back to 1994, that was Half String with Brief as Photographs, released on the Tripped Up Breathing EP on Independent Project Records. Before that, from the Words on Music label, we heard Lorna and Whatever Happened to Andy Walsh. Prior to that, Clock Strikes 13 with Bella Vista, and we started off with Quilt and Children of Light. This is DJ Frederick. You're listening to the Radio Thrift Shop on WSCS 90.9 FM in New London, College and Community Radio for the Kearsarge and Sunapee regions. I'm going to do a Drop the Needle segment. It's going to be a little bit different this time around. Mark from Glass Orchid Zine sent me an album. Extremely generous of him. It's an album by a group that is featured in issue 6 of Glass Orchid. They are the Montfort Singers, who eventually evolved into The Mission. And this album is a privately pressed album. It was manufactured for Montfort Missionaries by RCA Custom Record Division. And here are the beginning of the liner notes. The modern seminarian refuses to be part of a forgotten, faceless generation. He wants to be where the action is. He says no to waiting, yes to now. He lives in today. He wants part of today. Tomorrow is too late. Brother, or just plain mister, the today seminarian tells us he is of age. It's his world, too. There are seminarians behind walls. There are some out in the fight. But the ones within and the ones without are not speaking enough. Is anyone getting the message? Is anyone really listening? What does the seminarian feel? What does he want? They don't shout. They seem quiet and reserved. Someone better speak for them. Why not one of them? There'll Come a Day, the Montfort Singers album, fills a double need, the need for the seminarian to speak his mind, the need for the rest of the world to discover that mind. The Montfort Singers are seminarians. They step up to the challenge and walk away hand in hand with their own today. All right, the name of the album is There'll Come a Day. The Montfort Singers include Don Middendorf, Jack Coyne, John O'Reilly, Paul Baker, and Joe Valentine. So I've not heard this before. I have no idea what to expect. And if it's absolutely awful, of course, I won't play much more than a minute of it. But, who knows? So this is the title track to the album There'll Come a Day by the Montfort Singers. Let's drop the needle.
How many years, Lord, how many days can the world go on this way? How many trials, Lord, how many tears must we all? Peace to stay. Love is the answer.
right. The Montfort Singers, the title track to They'll Come a Day, which is a privately pressed album sent to me by Mark of Glass Orchid Zine. For more information, you can check out glassorchidmag.blogspot.com. Again, that's glassorchidmag.blogspot.com. Good stuff. Hopefully you'll be able to play more tracks from that album in the not-too-distant future and maybe track down some of their other recordings. Well, unfortunately, today, singer Edie Gourmet passed away at the age of 84. Edie Gourmet had a hit in 1963 with Blame It on the Bossa Nova, and she died in Las Vegas. Gourmet was born as Edith Gomenzano in the Bronx in New York in 1928. Her father was a tailor. She's a cousin of the singer Neil Sedaka. Her parents were Sephardic Jewish immigrants, and her father was from Sicily, her mother from Turkey. In 1953, she joined what became The Tonight Show on the NBC television network, and she met Steve Lawrence in 1953, hosted by Steve Allen. Gourmet's biggest solo hit was Blame It on the Bossa Nova. She also scored another success on her own in 1964 with the Spanish language song Amor, recorded with the Mexican band Trio Los Panchos. Well, we're going to hear some Edie Gourmet. This is with the band Trio Los Panchos. This is Sabor a Mí.
Pero tú llevas también sabor a mí.
Si negaras mi presencia en tu vivir, bastaría con abrazarte y conversar. Tanta vida yo te di que por fuerza tienes ya sabor a mí.
No pretendo ser tu dueña, no soy nada, yo no tengo vanidad. De mi vida doy lo bueno, soy tan pobre que otra cosa puedo dar. Pasarán más de 1000 años, muchos más, y yo no sé si tenga amor la eternidad. Como aquí en la boca llevarás sabor a mí.
Exploring Science in the Sea. The deep ocean teems with weird and wonderful life, from spiny sea stars to fish that generate their own light. To many biologists in the 19th century, though, such an abundance of life seemed absurd. With perpetual darkness, cold temperatures, and crushing pressure, it seemed impossible that anything could live very far below the ocean surface. That idea was known as the azoic theory, which means lifeless. It was proposed by Edward Forbes, a talented young British scientist. In the 1830s, Forbes dredged the ocean floor around the British Isles and cataloged the life he found there. Then in 1841, he sailed aboard the HMS Beacon, which was surveying the Mediterranean and Aegean seas. In the Aegean, he found that the abundance of life decreased as the depth increased. From that, he deduced that there should be little or no life below about 300 fathoms, a third of a mile. There was already evidence to the contrary, but it didn't matter. Most scientists accepted the idea. It persisted for about two decades. In the early 1860s, telegraph cables pulled up from depths of more than a mile were encrusted with corals, clams, and other life. And later in the same decade, scientists dredged up life from depths of hundreds of fathoms. It turns out that the Aegean is relatively barren, so there wasn't much for Forbes to catch. And his equipment wasn't very good, so it wasn't catching the life that was there. But Forbes's idea took on a life of its own, belying the truth of the deep ocean. Science in the Sea, a production of the University of Texas Marine Science Institute, is on the web at scienceinthesea.org. I'm Holly Brawley.
Sunshine came softly through my window today. Could have tripped out easy, but I changed my ways. It'll take time, I know it, but in a while, you're gonna be mine, I know it. You'll do it in style, 'cause I made my mind up, you're going to be mine. I tell you right now, any trick in the book. Oh, baby, all I can find. Everybody is hustling just to have a little scene. When I say we'll be cool, I dig that. You know what I mean. We stood on a beach at sunset. You remember when? I know a beach where, baby, it never ends. When you made your mind up forever to be mine, I tell you right now, any trick in the book can now, baby, all I can find. Superman and Green Lantern, they've got nothing on me. I can make like a turtle in a dark fog, afloat in the sea. You can just sit down thinking on your velvet throne, yeah, about a rainbow, say you can have for your own. 'Cause I've made my mind up, you're going to be mine. I'll pick up your hands and slowly blow your little mind. 'Cause I've made my mind up, you're going to be mine. Any trick in the book, I made my mind up, you're going to be mine. I tell you right now, I made my mind up, you're going.
All right, some music by Ennio Morricone. Great, great stuff. Before that, we heard Mel Torme with Sunshine Superman, Zacharias with Light My Fire, and Edie Gourmet and Trio Los Panchos with Sabor a Mi. This is DJ Frederick. You're listening to the Radio Thrift Shop, where the dustier the vinyl, the better. We celebrate old reel-to-reels, 78s, cassette tapes, homemade CDs, you name it. Radio Thrift Shop is analog culture for a digital world. If you'd like to go out and see some music, I have some listings and happenings for you, courtesy of Chip Colkard of Out of the Woods. At the Henniker Summer Concert Series this Tuesday, High Range will perform. That is an exceptional band, so that is definitely worth checking out. The show begins at 7 p.m. at the Angela Robinson Bandstand in the Community Park. For more information, visit henniker.org. on August, that's already passed. So at the Music Hall in Portsmouth on August 30th, Bela Fleck and Abigail Washburn. For more information, visit themusichall.org. And at the Colonial Theater in Bethlehem, New Hampshire on August 31st, the Carolina Chocolate Drops will perform. For more information, visit bethlehemcolonialtheater.org. And the Prescott Park Arts Festival is happening in Portsmouth. On August 21st, you have Ruth Moody, and on the 28th, the Spirit Family Reunion. For more information, visit prescottpark.org. Let's cruise on with some music by Tar Heel Slim and Little Ann.
But I
can't stay away.
No, I without a warning. You broke my heart, you took it darling, and you tore it apart. You left me sitting in the dark crying. You said your love for me was dying. I'm begging you, baby, baby, please. I'm begging you, baby, baby, please. Turn on the light, let it shine on me. Turn on your love light, let it shine on me. Let it shine, 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 let it shine. Get a little lonely in the middle of the night. I need you, darling, to make things all right. Come on, baby, come on, please. Come on, baby, baby, please. Shine on the light, let it shine on me. Shine on your love light, let it shine on me. A little bit higher, a little bit higher. A little bit higher, a little bit higher, a little bit higher. Come on, baby. Come on, baby. I'm begging you, baby. I'm down on my knees. Turn on the light. Let it shine on me. Turn on your love light. Let it shine on me. I feel alright. I feel alright.
All right, that was quite the set. We started off with Tar Heel Slim and Little Ann with Can't Stay Away From You. After that, Syl Austin, Slow Walk. Syl Austin wrote that tune. It's most often accredited to other artists. Bobby Bland with Turn On Your Love Light. And from 1921, Paul Whiteman, When Buddha Smiles. And it's time traveling time here on the Radio Thrift Shop. We're going to go back to the year 1906. That was the year.
That was the year. Recreating notable events of passing time. Reviving memories of men and women who have contributed to the history of a modern world. That was the year.
April 14, in an apartment in New York's Hotel Belcaire, sits Russian revolutionist, author of the dynamic play The Lower Depths, Alexei Maximovich Peshkov, whom the world knows as Maxim Gorky. His broad Slavic brow scowls in white rage as he scans the front page of a metropolitan newspaper.
Maxim, have you looked over your first lecture? Maxim, what is the trouble?
I cannot believe it.
What are you talking about? What is troubling you?
I am sorry, Andreeva, that we came to America.
Sorry? Why? They have given you a beautiful welcome, showered us with invitations.
Oh, that is done. Over. Look here.
Oh, they say I am not your wife.
Yes.
But in Russia.
Ah, Andreeva, this is not Russia. It is America, where newspapers can create wars, make rulers, set a man upon a pedestal or kill him as they wish. This is the land of the free, Andreeva. The nation will... Enter.
Mr. Gorky.
Yes?
I am the assistant manager of the hotel, and, well, I'm sure you must have read the papers, and, well...
And you desire that we leave your hotel. Is that it?
I'm so sorry.
I understand. We will leave at once. Come, Andreeva.
Canceling his scheduled lecture tour, Gorky and the woman newsmen had revealed was not his legal wife retired to a small cabin in the Adirondack Mountains. 7 months later, discouraged, broken in spirit, his health undermined by a racking cough, he sailed for Russia.
1906. That was the year.
San Francisco, April 18, 1906. 5 o'clock in the morning, the city sleeps. Then, about 15 minutes later, as though awakening from a long slumber, the earth stretches, clumsily throws startled humans from their beds. The shock lasts but a moment, and 300,000 persons await with tense fear. Then, another more vigorous tremor, and hundreds dash wildly into the streets. Finally, with a nauseating convulsion lasting about almost 2 minutes, the earth plunges the citizens of this western metropolis into a wild, deadly panic. Cast showers of bricks, mortar, and concrete into the twisted streets with cataclysmic violence. By 8 o'clock in the morning, those buildings not already destroyed by the earthquake was standing within the very path of a new catastrophe. Fire! The uninjured thousands rush to the city's parks, clutching their few salvaged possessions in helpless dismay. And then, down the crazy, desolate, uprooted causeway that had been Market Street, marched a regiment of U.S. soldiers from the Presidio, with General Fred Funston at their head, smiling with the innate confidence of uncontested authority. As the bluecoats approached, the citizens of the ruined city saw a new hope, took heart, and began the work of preventing the spread of fire and disease, healing the injured and burying the dead. And when the catastrophe had spent itself in terrible finality, from out the shambles of 497 city blocks, from out the 5 square miles of smoldering ashes, from out the shells of 28,000 buildings lying in pitiable destruction, from out the $1 billion of lost property, there arose a new metropolis. From the union of disheartening disaster and undaunted human courage, there was born anew the city by the Golden Gate, a regenerated greater San Francisco.
That was the year
that one of the most dramatically poignant scenes in history was enacted in Paris, France. 12 years before, in July of 1894, within the stately sanctum of the German military attaché, Colonel von Schwarzkoppen sends this man of medium height, sallow complexion, wearing a heavy, untrimmed mustache. He seems unduly agitated, but as Schwarzkoppen examines him, he sees the wide red ribbon of the French Legion of Honor and smiles.
Now, let me see. Oh, yeah. You want a passport to Alsace-Lorraine?
No. No, that was a ruse.
What?
Monsieur, I have documents in my possession which your government can use, which they need. I will sell them to you.
Do you mean to tell me that you, an officer in the Army of France, decorated by the Legion of Honor, wish to sell to the Imperial German government?
Yes. Documents. Important documents. I can get others, too. Monsieur, I am ruined financially. My wife is sick. My children do not eat. I must have money. If you do not buy this for me, I will kill myself.
September 26, 1894. In a small room of the Ministry of War...
But, Major Henri, where did you get such an incriminating piece of evidence?
Yes, where did you get it?
I received this paper through the usual channels. A woman in the employ of our intelligence division brings me the contents of the wastebaskets in the German embassy.
Mon Dieu, this is terrible. One of our own officers in this very department, guilty of treason. Who could it be?
Just so. Who could it be?
Certainly not Duval. Not Lieutenant Lebrun. Could it be Captain Boulanger or Captain Dreyfus?
Dreyfus?
Dreyfus.
He is a rather quiet, secretive fellow.
And he is...
Yes, Duparty. He is a Jew.
Yes, he is.
Captain Alfred Dreyfus is the traitor.
I am so sorry, Captain Dreyfus, that my hand is injured and I cannot write.
That is quite all right, sir. I do not mind writing for you.
Continue, then. A new line. A note on Madagascar. Ah, the handwriting is the same.
What?
Captain Dreyfus, I arrest you in the name of the law. I accuse you of the crime of high treason.
Ultimately brought to trial, Dreyfus was found guilty of treason. Stripped of his honors, his sword broken, all within the courtyard of the military school, while a mob of citizens and newsmen outside the enclosure hooted, jeered, called...
The dirty Jew!
I am innocent! I am innocent! Long live the army! Long live France! I am innocent!
Then Devil's Island. Years of patient waiting. Years of desolation, loneliness. While back in France, his brother, Matthew Dreyfus, his wife, Lucy, Major Picard, and a few others labored endlessly to find the true traitor. Finally, the accusation was made. It was Count Walsen Esterhazy, major in the French army. To disprove the accusation, documents were forged. Letters purported to be from Captain Dreyfus were manufactured, all at the direction of the condemned man's former superior officers. Dreyfus had been tried. He had been found guilty. He was serving his sentence. The matter was closed. Anything to save the army from further embarrassment. Then, the famous liberal novelist Émile Zola picked up the falling torch, issued his astonishing paper, J'accuse, I accuse, in which he bitterly indicted high officials in the Paris press for their part in the hideous affair, and ended...
I have but one desire,
for the truth to be made clear in the name of humanity. My burning protestation is but a cry from the heart. Let them dare arraign me before the court of assesses, and let the case be heard in the open. I am waiting.
Zola's object was to be prosecuted for libel. He succeeded in his purpose, but was found guilty. He appealed, but upon advice of friends, fled to England before his second trial. Gradually, however, and with increasing force, feeling in favor of Dreyfus grew, until, in the grounds of the military school, where 12 horrible years before he had been degraded, surrounded only by a few witnesses, on July 22, 1906, he heard through the mist of memories the voice of General Guillen.
On behalf of the President of the Republic, and by virtue of the powers conferred on me, I constitute you, Major Dreyfus, Chevalier of the Legion of Honor.
The Dreyfus affair was closed. Those who had accused him, Roger, former Minister of War Mercier, Generals Gans and Boisdeff, were ending their days in disgraced seclusion. Major Henri, who had uncovered the first piece of evidence, had been arrested on charges of forgery and died in a prison cell of suicide. Esterhazy, the real writer of that first note, was ending his days in England, hiding under the cloak of a series of false names. Albert Dreyfus, martyr to hypocrisy, deceit, collusive treason, was vindicated, completely rehabilitated in the army he loved.
That was the year
that in the lyrics of a highly popular ditty, a jaunty little bird was given credit for delivering this potent advice.
Every Saturday, Willie got his pay, then he'd call for Nell. Trousers neatly pressed and nice white vest, buttonhole bouquet as well. On Nellie's little hat, there was a little bird. That little bird knew lots of things it did, upon my word. And in its quiet way, it had a lot to say. As the lovers strolled along,
I'll be your little honey, I will promise that,
said Nellie as she rolled her dreamy eyes.
It's a shame to take the money, said the bird on Nellie's hat.
Last night she said the same to Johnny Wise. Then to Nellie Willie whispered as they fondly kissed, I'll bet that you were never kissed like that.
Nellie don't know Nellie like I do,
said the saucy little bird on Nellie's hat.
In a shady nook by the quiet brook, Nell and Willie fish. Lips together meet in kisses sweet, love is such a dainty dish. Then Nellie said to Will, such pretty things galore, but everything that Nellie said the bird had heard before. And as he took her hand and said, oh, ain't it grand, Nellie winked the other eye.
Now I haven't caught a fish, what do you think of that?
Said Nellie with a most bewitching look.
You can bet she knows her business, said the bird on Nellie's hat.
And Willie is the fish she's gonna hook. Oh, it's 12 o'clock, said Willie as he took her home. I'll bet you're never out as late as that.
Willie don't know Nellie like I do, said the saucy little bird on Nellie's hat.
That's going to wrap it up for our time traveling back to 1906 here on the Radio Thrift Shop. band named Farm from the soundtrack of the film Innermost Limits of Pure Fun. That was San Hosoi. This is DJ Frederick. We've come to the end of another edition of Radio Thrift Shop. Reminding you to be curious about life and music. Radio Thrift Shop is do-it-yourself radio, time-shifting through the past century of recorded music and sound. Okay, wherever you are on the planet, wherever you're listening, thank you for listening. And remember, stay focused. Don't get distracted by a culture in decline.